Blog Talk Radio. if I understand what I see on this little dashboard here at Blog Talk Radio. We're on the air with Hear the Monsters. I say we because I'm assuming somebody can hear, even though I don't know. That takes getting used to. I kind of look at this as a message in a bottle. Except for I don't feel like it's an SOS. I feel like we are, doing well. I feel like the people who are occupying this country and the world are just outstanding, brave, caring, connected individuals who are learning how to have a public discourse and democracy with an element of trust and love. That makes it different than Congress, and so General Assemblies don't look like Congress, and that is a good thing because Congress sucks balls. Anyway, hi, my name is Tricia. I write a blog called Menopausal Stoners under the name P.E. Nolan. Nolan was my grandma's last name, so when I chose that name, I chose that one. So that's who I am, Menopausal Stoners on blogspot.com. And I also work with an outstanding group of writers at Roundtree7.com. Roundtree7.com is sponsoring Hear the Monsters in our occupation of the internet and resistance to the mainstream media because the mainstream media sucks balls too. And we've almost been on the air here on the internet. Is that in the air? I don't understand if the internet is in the air or not. It is magic in my view, and something to be grateful for. This technology that is enabling us to connect with each other despite being separated by geography. And one of the things that has happened over the last 40 years or so, I can't even go back. As long as I know, there have been small families isolated in their homes looking at TV, which has been a propaganda box for our culture. If you ever read a book called Ishmael, and if you haven't, you should, by Daniel Quinn, Ishmael talks about an idea called the mother culture and how everything we come to know is true. And in this culture, we've come to know a certain structure and paradigm as true, and that is a vertical patriarchal hierarchy that you see in the Vatican, that you see in sports, like at that Pennsylvania, it might be Penn State, where those child molesters and perpetrators were in charge of the football program. And the fans were so distressed about his being fired for covering up protecting a perpetrator, which, in my view, makes you a perpetrator, too. Anyhow, they dumped over a news van and had a riot, and nary a cop to be found, nary a no tear gas, nothing, which just makes me nauseous, and that makes me as nauseous as Obama and the pipeline, I'm delaying a vote till after the election because I think he is a dickhead. And I just want to say for myself, I am not opposed to capitalism. People often show up in the trolling zone saying, oh, you're opposed to capitalism. And I have to say, I'm not. I like the conveniences of my life in America. I like all these things that I've had as a privileged suburban bitch that I have been and I suppose remain. But anyhow, there were murders and suicides in occupation this week, but kind of in the periphery because occupations wind up in areas that have formerly, until recently, up September 17th of this year, the very marginalized in our society were relegated to the territory where occupations have sprung up. And so there are mentally ill people who have been left out in the cold without medication because there's no place for them in an institution or anywhere that somebody will take care of them. Other people who have been just homeless for all the reasons that that happens. And now the college kids are there because they, too, don't really have a home. And anyway, it's all very sad, and Occupy Wall Street has growing pains because of integrating into the zone in society what had been for the most severely marginalized, I think. And now the kids are there, and I say kids because they're in the demographic of 20-somethings, early 30s, where the unemployment is at 55% the last time I heard, the highest unemployment since World War II, if I'm correct. So that's what happens when there are Hoovervilles. And so this year, the younger generation is building the Hoovervilles, the emerging generation. We all know why they're there, okay? I mean, there's been a lot said. And one thing that really caught my eye this week was Matt Taibbi's article in the Rolling Stone called How I Stopped Worrying and Learned to Love the OWS Protest. And Matt Taibbi says, I have a confession to make. At first, I misunderstood Occupy Wall Street. The first few times I went down to Zuccotti Park, I came away with mixed feelings. I loved the energy and was amazed by the obvious organic appeal of the movement, the way it was growing on its own. But my initial impression was that it would not be taken very seriously by Citibanks and Goldman Sachs of the world. You could put 50,000 angry protesters on Wall Street, 100,000 even, and Lloyd Blankenfeld is probably not going to break his sweat. He knows he's not going to wake up tomorrow and see Cornel West or Richard Trumka running the Federal Reserve. He knows modern finance is a giant mechanical parasite that only an expert surgeon can remove. Yell and scream all you want, but he and his fellow financial Frankensteins are the only ones who know how to turn the machine off. I have to stop for a minute for a moment and say here that what he's saying about them not breaking a sweat is true, and what my friend Woody, Walden Pond, and Worldwide Hippies always said is the trouble with these banksters is that there's no generational memory of the sound of guillotine, and they just forgot what it sounds like. I don't know if playing a recording of a guillotine outside Goldman Sachs would work or not. I have to confess that when I, Trisha, menopausal stoner, moved to New York City and had a child and first started integrating with people here, young families, one of the moms in mom's group, her husband worked for Goldman Sachs. And so I was so naive about banking. I mean, I knew they sucked and that they were typically bad people and a drag at parties because they were so uptight, even if they meant well. And anyway, I didn't like to party with bankers, and I wouldn't. But anyway, I thought Goldman Sachs was a furrier. And that's where we began. But now, back to Matt Taibbi. That's what I started. That's what I was thinking during the first few weeks of the protests. But I'm beginning to see another angle. Occupy Wall Street was always about something much bigger than a movement against big banks and modern finance. It's about providing a forum for people to see how tired they are, or to show how tired they are, not just of Wall Street, but everything. This is a visceral, impassioned, deep-seated rejection of the entire direction of our society, a refusal to take even one more step forward into the shallow commercial abyss of phoniness, short-term calculation, withered idealism, and intellectual bankruptcy that American mass society has become. If there's such a thing as going on strike from one's own culture, this is it. And by being so broad in scope and so elemental in its motivation, it's flown over the heads of many on both the right and the left. And I would have to say at this point, including Matt Taibbi's head. Matt Taibbi was so concerned for the fate of the movement with no message that you may recall in the beginning Matt Taibbi kindly, generously provided the occupation with some points it might consider. And I don't doubt that they're good negotiation points, and I think that at some point we need to think about really negotiating points. I'm sure people already are working on this somewhere, but I like to think that and there are certain pharmaceutical products that I totally support, and I would not want Valium, for example. I think that we should continue to have Valium prescriptions. I mean, like, whatever. There are some times when accepting the status quo is all right. And I like the level of medication in my house. but we could add to it. You know, we all have our price. I mean, if it's one thing you learn, one way I understood, I came to learn about how the world works is that when I was a girl at the University of Texas at Austin, I was dating a fellow who is the youngest son of a family of plaintiff's attorneys. And when we started dating, we were on a little private plane. For some reason, we were somewhere, and we hitched a ride back with his dad, this lawyer, on a little private plane. And he was with some Texas State Supreme Court justices. And at the time, the father, the big lawyer, daddy lawyer, was in trouble. He had just been on 60 Minutes on account of, in Texas, he was accused. Well, you know how they talk about buying judges, and so they, you know, people do that. So I was on the little airplane with the lawyer and the judges. He had reportedly bought... reportedly on 60 Minutes. And so anyway, those were the judges. One of them called their secretaries Lucky Ducky and Fucky. And so that's really what I came to understand to be the character of a person who is a judge, which prepared me for Clarence Thomas. Because really, anyway... where were we? 20 minutes into Here Be Monsters. Here Be Monsters. from Roundtree7.com. Gwendolyn Holdenberry typically hosts the show. She'll be on tomorrow, I believe, with her pal, Jack. They're always on Sundays at 6 on here, Be Monsters. And that's all I can think of to say right now. So I'm going to put on this song and try to think of something else to say.
I am living on channel.
Getting up to the static, getting up to the static, static feeling from my attic.
hi again. Another thing I've been thinking about is how Occupy Wall Street is the latest expression of the dispute ongoing historical confrontations between the owners and the workers. I find striking parallels between the situation today and the Battle of Blair Mountain, which is around the turn of the century. I don't have it pulled up, so I can't remember exactly the year. But I can say that the Battle of Blair Mountain in Kentucky, you know what I am going to look at it, but what happened there is there was, as there often is, the miners, the coal miners, wanted a decent wage and safer working conditions and stuff like that. And the owners didn't want to pay for it because they're cheap dickheads. And so, here, let me just check. BATTLESBLAIR, and there it comes, Battle of Blair Mountain. And I bet, well, there's a wiki, but I like Friends of Blair Mountain, but I don't see them like, oh, there they are. I like friendsofblairmountain.com. Here we go, history. The Battle of Blair Mountain was the largest civil uprising on American soil since the U.S. Civil War. It was a spontaneous outpouring of rage and grief over conditions in the southern coalfields and the August 2nd, 1921 cold-blooded murder of Mate 1 Police Chief Sid Hatfield, who a year earlier had befriended the miners when Stone Mountain Coal Company tried to evict striking workers from their homes. The battle lines were drawn by August 26, 1921, and by September 5, 1921, the rebellion was over. Over the course of the disruption, between 10,000 and 15,000 coal miners assembled near Lynch Creek in Kanawha County and armed themselves for a march over mountainous terrain to avenge Hatfield and to rescue illegally imprisoned miners in Mingo County. The miners commandeered trains, company wagons, company weapons, wagons, food, and other supplies as the rebellion grew. Now, let's point out here that the owners here have wagons full of food and weapons because that's what owners do, and we see this recently in Oakland. So, but they all have them, and they like them. That's why they are what they are. The two armies clashed along the top of Spruce Fork Ridge at Blair Mountain, firing more than 1 million rounds of ammunition at each other. The U.S. Army and Air Corps ultimately crushed a rebellion without firing a shot. The Union surrendered rather than fire upon American soldiers. And by that Union, I mean the workers' union, not the Union soldiers, okay? Got nothing to do with the Union soldiers. That's who they wouldn't fight against. The Union surrendered rather than fire upon American soldiers, making clear their patriotism. Although the rebellion did not succeed, it ultimately served as a rallying cry for organized labor throughout the U.S. and was instrumental in bringing the benefits of organized labor to working class Americans in all major industries. So this is a 1921 incident between the owners and the workers. And, you know, without any more middle class, it's the whole middle managers, and this is like the buffer that the owners used to have between themselves and the poor. And now that the middle class has joined the ranks of the poor, because of the income disparity and inequity in this country. I mean, I just want to acknowledge here that, you know, I don't want to sound like a bitch or anything because I'm a bourgeois bitch. And I say bitch with all the pride that goes along with being as bitchy as I apparently am. I can only say I learned to be a bitch at the knees of my mother. Is a double-barreled bitch, and I'd like to say thank you very much, and I'm grateful for the training that I got from my mother. So when I ran into those judges who called their secretary Lucky Ducky and Fucky and were on 60 Minutes for being corrupt, I don't know, whores, I suppose, you know, but, you know, it's, I don't know, it's business is business, you know, and that's just how we do business down in Texas. The whole world knows how to do it now. I'm sorry to say, I think Dick Cheney and Halliburton really do represent the feeling, the experience of business in Texas. I wish more businessmen would stand up and give Texas a good name, but always seem to be able to grow is Bill Graham, and that is pathetic and awful. Anyway, I wanted to get to Harlan County, Kentucky. In Harlan County, Kentucky. See, I think that that thing about Blair Mountain was leaving out about the little planes from World War One, because if I'm remembering correctly, Harlan County was, Blair Mountain is where they were dropping bombs in the neighborhood. Maybe it was down the road, but anyway, you know, the government was giving them, you know, the president was in the pocket of the owners and sent little airplanes to drop bombs, much the same way that Obama can, if he wants to, deploy the National Guard against us with all the might that the owners have built over the years. You know, that's what they do sometimes, and they did it back in the day. Here with the, you know, with the miners. And so, I don't like this one, the wiki one, wiki, I don't like this definition, so I'm going to look up Florence Reese, and the reason I like Florence Reese, and I said this before, but it's really exactly how I feel that this is Florence Reese. I can't find the one I like. But Florence Reese was the wife of a union organizer in 1931, so 10 years after Blair Mountain over in Kentucky, Florence Reese wrote the song, Which Side Are You On? And that was after union thugs who had been hired to beat up union organizers, much like you could look at the police in Oakland representing Jay Gould's promise to hire half the working class to kill off the other half, and it looks like, you know, that's just what it looks like to me with these police forces. But Florence Reese watched her house being busted to shreds, or whatever thugs do. They had come to kill her husband, I'm going to look up Florence Reese, Harlan County, and I'm looking for a website that I always like that really has more to do with the union story behind this, but I can't find it, but I can find the song, and I'm going to play it for you in a minute. The point is, Florence Reese responded from her heart to a crisis, and that's what people are doing here at Occupy Wall Street, and it's the same spirit, and it's the same conflict, and it's the same cyclical nature of the fight between, you know, oh, hey, somebody called in. Hello.
Hey, it's me.
Hi, how do you feel?
I'm getting better. Yeah, I'm getting better. I'm not congested like everybody else, and I only cough a little bit, and my head's only thumping.
Okay.
I wanted to call and say I really love what you're talking about and how you're coordinating it back and forth.
Oh, I'm glad you can see the connections and that it's coordinated.
It is. I wanted to make sure that I called in and let you know that you're doing a good job, and I will teach you how to open the chat room so you'll see who's in it and out of it.
Why this minute?
Yeah, you got me and three other people in the chat room, but I know you haven't got it open on the board because you're not in it.
Right. Well, what do you know how I would do that?
Mm-hmm. Look at the studio, look at the board, and on where it says send the message to Facebook and all of those.
Got it.
Yeah, there's a thing that says chat all the way to the right.
Got it.
You push that, and then push the button that says little chat room, and maybe it'll, sometimes it doesn't work after you've started to talk, you know.
Okay, well, here it's fun. Oh, I see all y'all now.
Yeah. There you are. You're in there.
All right. Cool.
Okay. I wanted to tell you, I thought you were doing an excellent job in corresponding the different Harlan County to the all of the what the middle class and what working people are facing today in a massive level in this country. I think that your point's very well taken, and I agree.
Well, I'm glad, because this is, in my view, this really is a generations fight this battle. But we're using different things now. You know, we're, I think, coming at it from a new paradigm that has to do with love instead of meeting violence with violence and all the stuff that we've been doing. I hope it makes a
Thank
difference.
You.
I hope we a little bit, a little bit.
I really agree with you on that, the violence thing. I'm a very, it's a peaceful movement. And actually writing a post on it today. It's a very peaceful movement, and it needs to be in order to be successful, because when you meet violence with violence, you're going to get you're going to lose, you know?
Well, one thing that's been happening, you know, Punk Patriot is here right now, not in the room, but he's staying here. And he and a friend of his were at the General Assembly last night, and it kind of fell apart because you know, they're still learning how to integrate in some of the voices. And I don't know if you're aware. You know the term manarchist?
No.
Okay. Manarchists in this group, okay, like if you look at Urban Dictionary, basically what it is like a manarchist is sort of a pejorative about a group of young men who call themselves anarchists, but they keep standing up and saying stuff that's really patriarchal in nature and don't recognize their own connection to the patriarchy, and then begin to ask that. And so what they've been doing is really working through that voice, and that's, you know, that's real in there and still, and it's often valid, but how do you integrate that into the discussion and keep everybody peaceful?
Yeah.
And they're working hard to do that, and so that's something that's happening next week, our workshops and anyway, with the training to have passive training, whatever it's called. I know you've had it when you were
yes, passive resistance. You know, we sat down. And I'm not sure if people really get that there was an armed resistance when they took Willard Strait Hall in 69 at Cornell. That's the student union. And, of course, I wasn't anywhere near the place. That's more of Maureen's time, I think. But it basically, out of that, because they ended up dropping, I believe, the charges against the Afro-American Society who did arm to take the hall. It was a war protest against Vietnam. But, you know, as usual, it was a lot of people of color. And in those days, it was usually the African-American community that was giving up more dead than any other culture in this country, you know. And there were like 270 or 80 a week being killed, you know, of our people, our boys. And there, out of that also, because that incident was, a lot of people say, became the whole, and Bill Maher graduated from Cornell, so you can imagine. The whole term political correctness came out of this incident because there ended up in Tompkins County, where Ithaca is, there ended up being no charges brought. They were dropped for the arms, that because it turned out that it was, they did it legally. And
okay.
Yeah, it was really... really weird. The whole thing, though, the whole point that I'm bringing to bear here is that you invalidate, I mean, remember that it was on the bones of the peace resistance, you know, that stopped the Vietnam War, but then the assassination of MLK and RFK and all the rest of the letters, everyone who gave their lives for everything that was achieved at that time all came to naught in the end because of the violence that on the ashes of those movements. You got the Symbionese Liberation Army, you got the attack in Laud Airport by the Red Japanese Army. The you know, that was Ilias Ramirez Sanchez, the jackal, rose up. Guy's being going through trial now for a lot of what he did. And terrorism became almost sympathetic in the 70s and 80s. The PLO, the PFLP, Dr. George Habash, you know, Munich, all of that. So that's why it's so important to keep, you know, in my head, the way I see it, it's so important to keep the resistance peaceful, like MLK or Gandhi, you know?
Well, you know, I'm just thinking of the words, keep the movement alive and keep the resistance alive, and it's in a very literal sense, you know, that being peaceful is the way to make sure it survives, and the movement and the spirit. And this is, I was listening before the show to the clip you had of David Crosby and Graham Nash on Olbermann earlier. And
yeah.
They had that, and he had this quote up there, and so I was listening to it. And it is that spirit. I mean, all of it rising up again, and that, you know, that comes up. That's a peaceful, collaborative spirit. And the reason so many people are befuddled right now is because they don't know what to make of peace.
Well, you know, it takes, I don't think people either understand. On the right coast, you have Occupy Wall Street, and all of the positive, peaceful, grounding, anchoring they have done there, and everything they face, including my sister was reading me something about how a fireman came and grabbed their generator again yesterday or something, and all of what they face and all of what they're building and all of what they're able to achieve, and the fact that all over, even though in Tunisia, with the self-immolation of a young man, all of this really began. This anchor of Occupy is in Wall Street, you know, in America. And it's being given that grace by all of these other movements calling themselves Occupy all over the planet. My gosh, you know. I think one of the most outstanding visions that you can have in your head right now of how much courage it takes to be the peaceful resistor is, you remember that man standing in front of the tank in Tiananmen Square?
Yes.
I think if you capture a vision like that, and another vision, well, I would say this to the other side, the left coast of our country has Oakland, Occupy Oakland, and everything it has put up with since it became an encampment, and everything that it stands to, you know, have to deal with, the peaceful resistance that those people in Oakland stick with is exemplary. You know, all the crap they're dealing with, and to have, you know, the casualties from the movement out there in the hospital, you know, Scott Olson, we really, from coast to coast, all the cities in between, the peaceful, and it personally, I don't know about you, Trish, but it scares me that there's gunfire and death in some of the camps, you know? And
I think it's really scary. I think that when you look at it in context, it makes sense within the context that it's occurring, but still that it's there at all is a constant reminder of how fragile it is. And I've never experienced bombs around my head, but I know you have. And if I'm remembering correctly, if that's right. Anyway,
don't understand what great violence can do, and you know the best great. I know, you know, there's no way to really relate to people. What you have to say is nothing. What you have to do is stand up and be committed. Do you follow where I'm going?
Absolutely.
You have to stand up and be committed and stick with it. And I think that almost every place, I have not really heard of one Occupy camp that has really broken with what has been established at Occupy Wall Street. And you go over to the other side of our country to Occupy Oakland, and then my sister read me a piece today, too, from Occupy LA, where a young lady actually had seen a couple of police officers dealing with someone outside of just off the sidewalk, and he tried to run from them and run into to evade them into the camp, and she helped get him caught, and she did the right thing because he was trying to run into the Occupy, you know, the occupation, and make it a place where he could hide from the police after he had broken the law. And so that's a case of the occupiers working with their community protectors, the police, and saying, here is the person you're, you know, this is the bad guy. It's Fox News that put out today about Portland, Oregon. I posted it in the room. I don't know if you saw it. It really
briefly. I was
and got up. Got up my butt a mile, as they say. Fox News put out a piece about protesters in the Portland, Oregon Occupy camp are talking about armed, you know, resistance. And that's just bullshit. It's not true.
That's just bullshit. I mean, that's why when I started to try to respond, it's like my heart goes like, I think it does get your dander up. And, you know, it's provocative. I think stuff like that is made to get our dander up. And so that, you know, there are a lot of people that can be hot-headed, and it's not a generational thing. It's not a gender thing.
I can be real hot-headed.
There's a difference between hot-headed and shooting off guns, you know. But the thing is that I like, I'm glad that the occupation is getting training in peaceful resistance in the face of, when the cops are coming after you. I know people are concerned about their welfare and that they be prepared, and that those of us who are not into going into marches where police could be throwing these things at you for whatever reason. I'm grateful that the people are there. That's not something that I'm in a position to do. Because, you know, some of us are just have a hard time getting around these days. But I'm just trying to say we support it and know that I'm glad they're getting the training in how to deal with it and be prepared for how you treat things and what do you do. And
you go low, you know. You go low. You let your body... And let's face it, our bodies are the only currency we have to spend anymore, you know? And that's what these occupations are all about. It's spending the last dime as a society.
And I look at kind of at the Keystone Pipeline project like that. That's beginning to look like a line to me. And it's reminded me about vertical and linear ways of control and government versus the horizontal model being used in the spokes council model at Zuccotti Park and elsewhere. So you can have how it's just circular and reaches out. And when I think of the, like, how you would graph it, what a graph would look like, or a chart of how consensus works, it really is like reaching a hand out to your neighbor who may be different and building, you know, just like they built arm in arm around the White House, and arm in arm across America and the oceans.
Right. Well, and it follows the General Assembly at OWS is following the program laid out by MLK, which, you know, it's that nonviolent resistance, of course, is not for cowards, and it's not a quiet, passive acceptance of evil. One is passive and nonviolent physically, but very active spiritually, and always seeking ways to persuade the opponent of advantages to the way of love and cooperation and peace. The goal is not to defeat or humiliate the opponent, but rather to win him or her over to understanding new ways to create cooperation and community. I read that.
I'm just so happy to see that in the occupiers that have been staying in my apartment this weekend, because there's also a friend of Punk Patriots who works on the Sustainability Committee. And one thing that they've been doing is, I think I mentioned that there was some abandoned property with a little bit of land in Staten Island.
Yes, that they were going to add a mental institution or something that they were going to try to squat.
But they've gone out and they've laid out, they've started the process to make raised beds. So there's a group from Sustainability that are going out there to find a bigger spot for occupying that's more comfortable. That's kind of following, it's just big enough to have the kind of meetings without relying on like an expansion zone. And anyway, they're bringing the compost out, they're making the raised beds, and they're making a sustainable community and going through arduous birth process, I think, of developing a way of like urban consensus that goes back to, like David Graeber says, about radical American history.
Guerrilla, yes.
You know, I'm just looking for the quote real quick. Oh, the direct democratic process adopted by Occupy Wall Street has deep roots in American radical history. It was widely employed in the civil rights movement and by the Students for a Democratic Society. But its current form has developed within movements like feminism and even spiritual traditions, both Quaker and Native American. So,
absolutely. And also, anybody who's living that way is actually going to be going through what the Native Americans or the indigenous people of this continent would refer to as an inipi or sweat lodge. They're going to be cleansing themselves. It's like that 40 days and 40 nights adrift in the desert. When you are, you know, not connected up to the rest of society because you have no electricity, no, you know, this, that, and the other, and you're living very plain without them, you take the garbage out psychologically.
Yeah,
the psyche. The psyche becomes more clean. Or in other words, empty, to be filled with better things.
And I think that we're kind of watching that play out in, I don't know, I think the General Assemblies, and especially in New York, is the one I know most about. I don't know what happens in Oakland, but I know it's very, you know, it's established and good.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and that people are trying to trust each other to handle this in an ethical manner. I think that the episode with the Wells Fargo Bank was illustrative about how, you know, there was an explanation that, like, look, it could have been handled better on a, you know, mechanic standpoint, but they needed the money out there for, in case people got arrested, they wanted to have money quick, on cash money, ready money in Oakland. And that's, you know, I mean, it's the transparency that I'm getting at. These are well-intentioned. These are ethical people operating with transparency. And
they are.
So,
they're the only people in this country right now who I think are occupied.
Yeah. You know, I'm waiting for you to talk.
I know. And I'm like, they're the most ethical I can think of right now. I just wanted to call in and say, rawr, good job, and thanks for letting me talk your head off for a while.
Well, we made it an hour, and that's beyond my goal. So thank you. Between the two of us, we accomplished another Occupy an Hour.
You're getting better at this, and I think you're going to find some kind of a stride where you figure out what you really like to do with it.
Well, you know, it's like I'm learning how to do it and breathe at the same time, and as I get more accomplished.
Oh,
with that,
I know. I find now I have to write a lot of stuff out, but you know what? They say it takes so many hours of doing something to really become good at it. So,
yeah, well, you know, and you don't. I think I can't remember if it was Eleanor Roosevelt who said every day you should do something that's scary for you. I know.
There you go.
And
I think, and who's better than Eleanor Roosevelt, huh?
I know. I'm like, why? Like, I will listen to Eleanor Roosevelt. So, well, you go.
Hell, I'd buy her a drink.
I wish there was a way to have drinks with all the people you would want to have drinks with.
You know, we all deserve to meet up in Maui.
but these are, you know, I'm just so encouraged, and I'm glad, you know, just everything, it's a small movement and we need to nurture it. And I think we are doing our part, me and you, you know, all the old injured ladies, you know, we're doing our thing to keep it alive.
We are, and you know what? It's really quite a huge movement when you consider just how far it's gotten, how quickly, and the kind of people who are supporting it and who keep stroking it, like, you know, the people who show up at Fukati Park, the people who show up, like Michael Moore. What a man. He's been all over the country, stroking everybody, saying what a good job they're doing. You got to give it up for a guy like that, don't you?
Absolutely. I like Michael Moore. And I just think, you know, people there's just so many causes for celebration. And I know there are things to worry about and on it too. But, I mean, I don't like to focus on things that aren't really real. And I think worry focuses on what's not really real, and what's real is in this moment. And there's so much to be grateful for about the way things are developing. And
you're right.
You know, it's like that's where I want to be after 11/11/11. Is let me just think about with gratitude what exists and acknowledge reality for what it is. I think we all know reality. All that is situational. So anyway, I just feel, the spirit is growing every day. I'm glad that asteroid fund. I'm glad you told us what the asteroid means. That meant, that was, or continues to mean. I like that asteroid story. The Blue Kachina one. Anyway, were you ready to sign off for the day?
I will leave it to you, and I'll say ta-ta, and I will see everybody tomorrow.
It's 6 o'clock tomorrow, you and Jack Jodell?
That's right, tomorrow.
All right.
6
tomorrow. I don't know if I'll be here or not, but I hope to hear you, whatever, and I hope you're well. And
I'll say,
and this has been Here Be Monsters, sponsored by Roundtree 7. That's Roundtree 7, the number 7, the numeral, .com. And thanks for being here and solidarity. And I was thinking about Harlan County and all of that when Gwen called in, and I was so glad to hear from Gwen. Because it's just nice to have a friend to talk to. And that's why I wish people would call in to Here Be Monsters, because it's nice to have a friend to talk to. And sometimes, really and truly, you're miles and miles and miles away from anybody you'd feel safe to talk to. Your neighbor across the street might feel exactly like you do, and we don't talk to each other a lot. So it's and maybe that's a good thing, but maybe it's not. So anyway, this is about Harlan County and my hero, one of my heroes, Florence Reese, who wrote this song, that Pete Seeger, and here he comes. Later.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side? You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you, fellow workers, until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Sing it!
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? or will you be a man? Which side are you on?
Monsters. Over and out.